Hey, this is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening to Cine Snob Podcast. Have a groovy time. Enjoy it, okay? It's not for eating, just for listening, for God's sake. Bye.
The Cine Snob Podcast is brought to you by Alamo Drafthouse. Hey, you guys. Hey.
What's up?
The one and only Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory will be playing at Alamo Drafthouse Stone Oak, September 26, 2015. This is the ultimate Willy Wonka party with special guests. Paris Timmon, who played Mike TV, and Julie Don Cole, who played Veruca Salt.
Nice. I've interviewed them both.
What's that? You have?
Yeah, when they had another event like this a couple of years ago.
Wasn't Mike TV from San Antonio or something, or lived here?
Maybe. I don't remember that. You might be thinking about somebody else.
Okay. Well, anyway. Yeah.
Are you a Willy Wonka fan?
I love that movie. And the Tim Burton one can go straight to hell.
Really?
I do not like that movie.
I thought it was
all.
Okay.
I don't like
it. It was all right. Come on.
I mean,
dude.
That's the second worst collaboration, I think, between, well, let me rephrase that. It goes Alice in Wonderland, then Dark Shadows, and then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for me for worst Tim Burton movies with Johnny Depp. That was a very complicated way of saying that I don't like it. I can't stand the stupid dentist subplot that the movie ends and then you keep going like, I don't care about Willy Wonka's father. I mean, it's cool to see Christopher Lee, but I just didn't care. Anyway, this is not about this. This is about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory starring Gene Wilder with the crazy eccentric songs and the weird thing when they're on the boat and the snake gets its head chopped off and all that crazy crap.
If you want weird, and this is kind of related, Primus last year, or maybe, yeah, it was last year, came out with a reimagining of the Willy Wonka soundtrack.
And
it's called,
wow.
It's called Primus and the Chocolate Factory. And they take the entire soundtrack and do like weird Primus versions of it. It's so weird, but it's really good.
I mean, 1994 me would be a little more interested in that than 2015 me is. But
I didn't even know Primus still was together.
Oh, yeah. They did a giant set when they were here last where they had like a giant chocolate fountain and they did like his songs from it.
Dude, you are a way bigger Primus fan than I would have ever guessed.
Yeah, I love Primus.
I thought maybe it was just because of the South Park theme song. Is that how you got into him?
No.
Or was it Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver?
I love that song. By the way,
which one? The Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. That's just so bizarre. You remember, Augustus Gloop is the first kid to get the ticket, and all of his family are like big fat pigs, and they're always eating. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the guy's interviewing him in a restaurant, and his dad just eats the microphone. I love that scene, and it's just like a stupid gag that it cuts off immediately right after that. You'll get to meet Mike TV, Veruca Salt, that is Paris Timmon, and Julie Don Cole. And each member of the audience will also receive a special edition Willy Wonka poster signed by Paris and Julie. And that is coming up Saturday, September 26th, Alamo Drafthouse Stone Oak at 7:30 p.m. You can buy your tickets. Excuse me, you can buy your tickets online. Make sure you reserve your seat ahead of time. That way you're not stuck in the back like a chump.
What's the actress's name that you keep on saying?
Julie Don Cole.
Okay. For some reason, like every time I hear this is going to be so inside because it's a Steve Brühl reference.
Okay.
But every time I hear like a three-worded name, I always think of Rondon Vellante. I don't know why.
What was the most recent season where Rondon Vellante had the strip club?
Yeah.
And and it burned down. You need to check it out.
Hey, Kiko, we can hear
What's
you
up?
Whistling.
I'm whistling the fucking theme song to Willy Wonka.
Well, maybe don't do it while other people are talking into your mic.
What do you get when your kid is a brat? Pampered and spoiled like a Siamese cat. That's all I know of that song.
That's pretty good.
One. Thanks. Anyway, Saturday, September 26th, the ultimate Willy Wonka party, Alamo Drafthouse Stone Oak, 7:30 p.m. Let's start the show.
In a world filled with movie podcasts, three critics from the juggernaut media market of San Antonio decided to change the entire course of the internet. A feat attempted by many and conquered by many. To produce a relatively listenable podcast. Devastating truth bombs.
Brace yourselves, guys. The Muppets are puppets. You know that, right?
No! Wait! Okay, no!
They're puppets.
Don't ruin it!
And
Muppets are puppets.
This is gonna...
Hard facts.
Yeah, not Kevin Feige or Feig, whatever. But Feig. I think it's Feige.
Is it really?
I have no idea.
Asking the important questions.
What is that? What was that that I just saw right now? It was like a fat Iron Man.
That's a Hulkbuster.
Hulkbuster armor. That's how he fights
the Iron Man.
This is the CineSnob Podcast.
So it's been a very busy weekend for the three of us.
Yeah. It has.
We
some more than others.
Yeah. It's busy for me because I have to drive more if I'm doing anything in San Antonio.
You should like get a driver or something.
They need to hurry up and build that rail.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that rail.
Yeah.
Waiting to
have 10 more years.
Yeah, probably more like 25.
Yeah, probably more like 30.
Yeah, it's probably 35.
Oh, yeah, probably like 40.
By then, my Google self-driving car will be here. And,
it'll be a thing of the past.
Yeah. No, we each spent some time at Alamo City Comic Con this weekend. Cody and I went together on Friday, walked the floor.
Which, Cody, by the way, that took us over 3 hours. It took us like 4 hours to walk the floor.
There was a ton of stuff. And you made, this is not only your first Comic-Con, right, Cody?
Uh-huh. Well, no, I went last year for a day.
Oh, you went last year. But yeah. Okay, well, this is your first time purchasing something.
I made a purchase, yes.
After
regretting not making purchases last year, I felt like I needed to do it, so it's funny because Jared and I walked by the same booth like 3 or 4 times trying to figure out if we wanted it because we bought the same print.
Yeah, got a deal on it from a guy named Bob the Artist is his art name.
Yeah,
Robert Ludke.
Yeah, super talented guy. He's got really great stuff. You can go on BobTheArtist.com and actually buy the print that we bought. But it is a newspaper from the Netflix series Daredevil. And it's a really detailed print of Daredevil standing on the rooftop. There's like kind of like an iconic scene in that last episode with the headline from the paper from the last episode as well. And it's really cool looking. I was very happy with it.
You already went out and framed it.
I did frame it.
Yeah, I haven't even done that yet. But
yeah, you made way more purchases than I did.
I bought some more stuff today.
Did you
that
really?
Was Friday, yeah. I bought the from a company called Albino Dragon. They make officially licensed playing cards.
Oh, you went back and bought some Breaking Bad cards?
I bought the Breaking Bad cards, and they're actually like real bicycle playing cards. You know, the bicycle company.
Yeah.
There's probably some like crazy story about how they're the only playing card company in the world or some crap like that. Kind of like Luxottica makes every pair of sunglasses in the world.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bicycle has a monopoly on playing cards.
And you also bought Monopoly.
I bought for playing cards, I bought the Breaking Bad set with the blue crystal meth background. They had two different backgrounds. I also bought the Ghostbusters set and the Gremlins set.
Jesus.
Dude, I know. it's a sickness. And I also bought a copy of, is that how you say it? A copy? I bought a copy of the Back to the Future Monopoly board game.
Yeah. Hey, did you get your print of the coyote thing?
I did. I went back today and got it.
How does it look?
It looks pretty great.
I kind of regret not getting one.
The artist's name is Broseph Yo. I'm not sure what his real name is, but that's
probably Joseph.
That's, yeah. But Broseph Yo at Broseph Yo on Twitter or brosephyo.com. It's a you know, the classic ice cream truck, ice cream pictures, you know, like Ninja Turtles and stuff. But it's
like the melted stuff, like the melted pictures.
Well, it's not melted.
No,
but
like
it's
the bar.
Yeah, like the bar, you know, like you would see on the side of a truck. And it's the Spurs coyote. And it's a really cool print. He he was out of them on Friday when I went, so I paid him in advance and picked it up today.
Yeah.
It's a little 8x10 print. I did also buy, someone was selling a Ninja Turtles ice cream print, and I bought that too.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. I strongly toyed with some of those. I don't have any of those pop figures, but I almost bought a set of Arrested Development and Hannibal pop figures.
Yeah.
But
they had all the characters?
Yeah.
Those pop vinyl figures from Funko are incredibly, like, they span everything in pop culture.
Yeah. I was when I saw the set from Arrested Development, I'm like, what the hell is this?
I mean, they literally, if you can think of a property, it probably has a Funko.
Ooh, if they have a There Will Be Blood one, that'd be awesome.
Well, yeah.
See,
they don't have that yet. They don't have that yet. They do have football players, like officially licensed NFL players, Arrested Development, like Cody was saying, Hannibal, anything that's that leans a little more nerd friendly. I mean, Star Wars is full of them. You know what's funny is they don't have a license to make, because the figures are considered action figures.
Yeah.
I think technically. But since Hasbro has the license to make certain properties out of action figure license to make that, all the Star Wars stuff of that Funko thing, the Funko properties are bobbleheads.
Oh.
So, I mean, they look the same from a distance. But anyway. That's a little.
I only own a few of those pop ones, but my daughter plays with them, so they're not like.
Were they the Big Hero 6 or something?
One of the Big Heroes, just the Baymax from Big Hero 6, and then I have a couple from How to Train Your Dragon.
What's so funny over there, Cody?
I'm looking at the Funko website, and I'm looking at the TV stuff, and they have a Funko of Dr. Blake Downs from Children's Hospital.
Oh, wow. With the bloody scrubs?
Yes.
Nice. That's a little risque.
And what is it? John Wayne Gacy face paint.
Oh, was it the? Yeah, that's right. You almost bought the? Well, I don't know if you almost bought it, but you were seriously considering the convention exclusive Hannibal.
Oh yeah.
That, like, the box was blood spattered.
Yeah, and like Hannibal was holding a knife, and his entire body was splattered with blood. It was really awesome, but it was $95.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff there. And I got the chance to host some panels again this year, which all were really, really great. The first one was on Friday, and it was Judith Hogue from the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and the upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, as well as Francois Chow, who played Shredder in the second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. And of course was... various differently named candle themed characters on Lost. If you remember, he was the Dharma Initiative guy that was on the training films and a whole bunch of. Didn't he end up being Miles' father? The character of Miles' father?
Yes.
I asked him about Lost during the panel. He's like, I had no idea what was going on. He's like, it would change every time. I also did hosted the Game of Thrones panel with Christian Narn, Go ahead.
You know, Christian Narn is the DJ, right?
Yeah, not in Game of Thrones. There's no DJ. He's throwing those sick beats in Westeros. He plays Hodor, the giant who only says Hodor. But he was a great panel. I mean, he's this like giant Irishman.
Holy crap! That dude right next, that dude standing next to you looked huge.
He is
dude.
Giant.
I saw him. Yeah, he was just sitting. The little chair that he was sitting in, just like.
Well, it was a cat. It was like a full size couch, and he was just like a monster sitting on it. I mean, but he was a great, great panel. Just a great interview. Everybody kept asking him for spoilers for the show. I asked him if he knew if Jon Snow was really dead. That was somebody wrote a current story about that. I'm not sure who wrote that interview, wrote that panel up.
Oh yeah.
But then I skipped Saturday because I went to the lake like a chump and got sunburned like a motherfucker.
I went to the UTSA game, so I missed too.
Yeah. It's a little difficult for me to. It's a little taxing to come 3 days in a row from Austin. It totally wears me out. But so Sunday, today I went back and hosted the Edward James Olmos panel. who, holy crap, that guy is amazing, is an amazing storyteller and just activism and things. I mean, seriously, more people there had seen Selena than had seen Battlestar Galactica, which I find just strange at a Comic-Con. But he talked about Selena. I mean, he had long stories about everything. I mean, and really kind of powerful stories about, he had a PBS show called American Family that had its funding pulled because it was allegedly too controversial, because it was talking about the Iraq War while the Iraq War was going on. Meanwhile, he slides immediately from that to Battlestar Galactica. Have either of you watched Battlestar Galactica?
Nope.
Never.
So, you know, you think of the cheeseball 70s version, but this modern version from 2003 is when the miniseries started. It's a serious political allegory. Like, it's about terrorism. It's about suicide bombers. It's about abortion. And, you know, that got him and the creators invited to speak at the fucking UN about these things.
The UNGORA. Man, not to interrupt.
Yeah.
But I'm totally going to. I'm still on the Funko website.
Yeah.
They have some amazing stuff.
Like what?
Like, they have like Big Lebowski ones.
Oh yeah. I've
down
seen those.
Down to having like Donnie. They have Steve Buscemi's character. They have Step Brothers, Super Bad.
Holy shit, they have Step Brothers?
Yeah, they have.
God damn it.
They have Dale and Brennan Step Brothers figures.
Funko, I want Step Brothers. We will be your total slaves to advertising if you send us some Step Brothers.
They have Shaun of the Dead.
I can't believe they have Step Brothers.
I know.
That is an crazy, amazing revelation to me.
They have a bunch of Pulp Fiction stuff.
Yeah.
They have a Gimp.
No. Do you guys know the meme of hipster Ariel?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
It's basically someone took pictures from The Little Mermaid and threw like big thick hipster glasses on Ariel and made a bunch of hipster jokes. I can't even remember what they are. But stores like Hot Topic, which, like, if I walk in there, they think it's, you know, they call the police because I'm way too old to be in there. But they have exclusives of these Funko Pops, and one of them that I bought when I saw it on site was the hipster Ariel. They took just the little mermaid Ariel and stuck like thick glasses on her, and it's all officially licensed and everything. It's just amazing to me the stuff that gets made with this Funko. Like, they have the best like licensing department.
Oh ever. Yeah, I'm looking at their upcoming stuff, and they've got everything. They've got Friends. They've got Seinfeld ones that are coming out. Saved by the Bell, MacGyver, Top Gun, Bob's Burgers. These are all ones that are coming out. It's crazy.
That's, yeah. Whoever is in charge of licensing all that stuff is just doing an amazing job.
This might be the one thing that I allow myself to do because it's kind of awesome.
It's a little bit addicting. You got to be careful. You got to dole it out. I bought a Stan Lee one last year at Alamo City Comic Con that he had autographed. And it was actually discounted. Like, they were charging, he was charging $80 for an autograph, and they were selling this Funko Pop with an autograph for $50. And I said, why is it cheaper? And they're like, oh, well, there's some slight errors in the paint job on it. And I'm like, whatever, I don't care. I just saved $30 on a Stan Lee autograph and got a free Stan Lee Funko out of it. But yeah, that's the sickness that you live in a collector world like that, is like, oh, his shoe is painted slightly different.
But see, I don't know that I would want to. I would want to open them.
Okay. You know what? There are people at work that have them. The last two places I've worked, and they all keep them in boxes.
What do you do?
I keep them in boxes.
See, I don't know that that's – I mean, I don't know.
You keep them in other boxes, or you keep them
box? No, in the box they came in. I pack them away and don't look at them.
I kind of feel like it would be – and I know this is like a terrible thing to say for, you know, toy collectors, but I don't know. I feel like it would be a lot more fun to have them out.
I mean, those things, it depends. I mean, I can see the appeal in having them out just because – And you know what the best part is? Is that the boxes are just there. Like, you're not destroying it to get it out of the package. So if you ever wanted to put it back in, you know, if you wanted to save the box or something, you know, because like that Hannibal one with the blood spattered box.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure you'd want to display it in that thing, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if
you which ones do you have, Jared? Too many to name. I mean, I'm sure you have the.
I don't have that many, honestly.
You don't have Marty McFly?
No, not yet. I do have the whole Wreck-It Ralph set. I have one from a show called Regular Show that I love. Funko links, Cody?
Yeah, check it out.
it's funny because I'm looking at them too right now, and the Despicable Me one doesn't really look different from any of the other toys.
God damn it, that Dale Doback from Step Brothers. Holy shit. Oh, it's a pre-order. It hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
God damn it, that thing is amazing.
I know.
It's fucking John C. Reilly, like down to the hairline with a pair of drumsticks.
Here's this one. The URL's wrong, but it's the right one.
Okay, let's see.
Where are you looking to see the ones that are coming?
They're just all on the Funko website.
It's Will Ferrell, Brennan Huff with a katana. These are great. I mean, anyway, I have that. I have like I said, I have the hipster Ariel. I have Heisenberg from Breaking Bad. I also have the Hot Topic exclusive Gus Fring with half of his face blown off. I have Benson from Regular Show, who's the gumball machine, and mm-hmm. he has actual little gumballs inside of him.
Oh, cool. I like that.
Yeah. I have Kermit the Frog, I believe. And there's one more. Oh, Slimer from Ghostbusters.
Mm.
And I think that's it. I'm totally down to have more, though. I mean, if you know, I don't get every single one of them because, you know, I'm not a fan of every single they put out. But like the weird stuff, like Step Brothers, holy shit, you better believe I'm buying that.
And they're relatively reasonably priced too. Like,
they're always around $10. Yeah, I mean, you may at a convention you may get it. Oh, this is the one that I have. This is the bad one that you're gonna laugh at. I have a Conan O'Brien one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Fuck you, Cody. No, I have a Conan O'Brien one that I bought on because I don't know if you know, he was at San Diego Comic-Con this year, did four shows there, and every show gave out exclusive Funko Pops that were Conan O'Brien Funko Pops. And they weren't sold anywhere. They were only given away there, and they all went up on eBay. And, you know, people were just paying like $150 for a normal one. Well, I saw one that was autographed with a picture showing him autographing it. And I paid north of $200 for it. So,
oh, my God.
Hey, shut up. What do you have that's ridiculous? There's got to be something.
Ridiculous how?
Like if somebody knew how much you paid for it, that even though you loved it, you'd kind of be embarrassed.
You know, I don't really have much of that. I mean,
I'm not talking necessarily memorabilia, but you know, something that you drop money on. I mean,
like a guitar, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe my sound system.
Yeah. I mean, that guitar you're pulling all that sweet puss in. That's like an investment.
Can't put a price on that.
But you mean like a stereo system in your room?
I mean like my surround sound speakers. Like I bought this for Christmas. I brought myself a new receiver and two new bookshelf speakers for my small, tiny room.
It's surround sound, guys. Barrel. Yeah, so anyway, so that's really all I've got.
I have like over 300 Blu-rays that I've watched maybe 10% of them, so maybe that's probably it.
Yeah, I finally broke my habit of buying movies. Like I had to do it sometimes. I was like, oh, here, this movie's out, I may watch it. And, you know, ended up, they would still be in shrink wrap 3 years later.
Yeah.
Where was I at? We got on a Funko.
I don't know because we got so caught up in all of these awesome Funko.
They're amazing. God, the John C. Reilly one as Dale Doback. Oh, my God. That is totally mine when it's released. Oh, yeah, my last panel I did, the Guardians of the Galaxy with Sean Gunn and the amazing Michael Rooker. We were talking a little bit about this before the show started. Rooker was like 20 minutes late to his own panel and like came in and just owned the place, like brought donuts and was 100% on the whole time. Like he was in our podcast. I mean, just busting ass.
Oh,
busting balls.
Jesus, were there children there?
Busting balls. Oh, I mean, if you look it up on Twitter, there's a woman that was like, "Can you teach me how to whistle?" Which, of course, he did in our podcast last year.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like he's on top of her. Like he's like, "Come on up here to the front." And he's got his arm around her and his face is close to her, trying to teach her how to whistle. And meanwhile, she's like, "My husband's right over there." And he's videotaping, like he's shooting with his camera the whole thing.
There's a really funny video. I don't know if you guys remember it from last year, where Michael Rooker was doing like a speed round at one of those Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
And just answering, like he would call on someone. They would ask him a question and he'd give really brief answers and go next. and so one of the questions he got was, "Say, would you like a chocolate covered pretzel?" And he just goes, "Shut up, next."
I hope somebody recorded this whole panel because it is really great. There is some great Rooker stuff in there. Like he came in carrying a box of Krispy Kremes with two donuts in it, and he was eating one as he walks in, and I made some crack about, you know, he didn't bring enough for the class, and then how he should give give those donuts out as prizes to the best question. And like, I can't remember what, some guy won one by asking some ridiculous question, and Rooker like threw the donut to him, like from the table. And some little girl closed it out with we were trying to get a good question to close it on. And people just kept asking stupid questions. I don't want to say stupid, but just questions that were like, "Can I take a picture with you?"
I hate that.
But you know what's crazy is that as the panel ended up, like the box is on the table, the Krispy Kreme box, and some guy is on the side of the table, and he's talking to me, and he's like, "Hey, can I have the box?"
Oh my god!
All right, sure. So I gave him the box, and later I see him carrying it around. I'm like, "This is just garbage." Like, I don't even think it was, like, he didn't even buy it. I think somebody gave it to Rooker, like, "Here's some donuts." But you know, fandom's a weird thing. I mean, I can't say that if it was Ben Affleck's donut box, I wouldn't have saved it.
Yeah, no kidding.
But you know what I mean, donut box. Oh shit, I gotta remember to, Project Greenlight starts, I think, tonight.
Was that because you want him to glaze your face? Is that what you're talking about?
I want him to fill my donut, if you know what I mean. Or glaze my face. I like that too. It's gonna look like, you know, when you watch the donuts being made at Krispy Kreme, and like glaze just pours over them. Just like that. Just like that.
Oh boy.
Anyway, thanks again to friend of the show, Apple De La Fuente. And his staff for hooking us up with some passes to go see all this stuff at Comic-Con. Cody might want to host a panel next year.
Yeah, I'm going
to
give it a shot.
Work himself up to it. I was trying to get you to do it this time, and you're being all wishy-washy.
Yeah, there was too much going on. Hopefully next year there's no UTSA game that I have to contend with, and I can just do it. Nike.
Yeah. What?
I don't know. It's Nike style.
Not a sponsor.
Oh, sorry.
Not a sponsor.
SAS?
Capa.
Capa, yeah. Switch out the cards, make the arrows different colors.
God, the Cowboys are imploding right now.
Does that mean that they're doing well?
Imploding is never really that good.
Yeah.
This is going to be timely because this is going to go up like...
Yeah, I should point out I'm watching the Cowboys game and podcasting at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on from Comic-Con to another event we did on Friday night. Cody and I went together on a date to see E.T. in concert with the San Antonio Symphony at the Majestic Theater. again, another event where the San Antonio Symphony plays the score along with the film. And again, another event where, in a great way, I couldn't tell the symphony was there.
Yeah, they did it again. I mean, it's such – I mean, then that's the highest compliment you can really pay them, that it's just seamless. I mean, it's you don't fully recognize that there are human beings in front of you playing music without watching the movie. They're just staring at their music and I guess their conductor? I don't know.
I think that's how that works.
Yeah, well, I mean, they never really look up from the music, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe they see him out of the corner of their eye.
He's got to be there for a reason.
Showmanship.
He's moving his hand, moving his hand up and down, you know.
Yeah, but you know, amazing John Williams score, which was good. I don't mean to slight anything about it, but I kind of thought that the Star Trek was better. I don't know what it was about it, but
well, that's a different sort of movie, though. I mean, that's an action movie, you know, and that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of score.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the Star Trek movie was more score than this for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, this is a 33-year-old movie at this point. So it's not, you know, it's a different era. And it was a family film, you know, so it's not in your face the whole time. I don't want to, not in a bad way in your face, but it's not such a prevalent part of the movie. It's not driving the action, really. It's just more setting the mood. And
right. And the E.T. theme is great. And it sounded that, you know, it got super loud and the volume swelled when they have the big moment in the film. So. You know, super, super fun as usual. I love this. I hope they keep on doing this series for a long time.
I saw the poster in the lobby and I got excited because they're doing Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, they're doing Raiders of the Lost Ark in February. And I really hope that they keep doing, I mean, not just John Williams, but other things. But I mean, I would love to see like Jurassic Park or, you know, some of the more iconic stuff. You know, Star Trek Into Darkness wasn't even iconic, but it, you know, it was still great. So, you know, there's room to do all sorts of stuff.
I wonder how they might approach something that also has popular music in it.
Yeah,
like I'm thinking one of the most iconic themes I can think of is the Forrest Gump theme. But that movie has so much pop music in it that it may kind of not be worth it in the long run. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. I love Forrest Gump, but the theme is pretty iconic, I think, at least in my opinion. But there's so much of that music, you know, of the era that drives it along that it may not be a good event for a symphony.
Cody, being the youngest of out of all of us, do you know the theme to Forrest Gump? Close enough.
Ming, 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 ming.
I don't remember.
I it's the do 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 do, right?
Do 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 do.
That sounds like elevator music. Oh. I feel like that's an old term, by the way. Elevator music. I feel like a grandpa.
What would you call it? Like grocery store music?
Yeah, maybe, or like the hold music.
There's it must be like a package some people buy of hold music, because there's several places that I've called that have some weird, like almost Trans-Siberian Orchestra-y, vaguely Christmas-sounding music, but it's not either of those things. But it sounds like it could be like a section of like the fucking Trans-Siberian Orchestra, like just jamming out for a Christmas tune, man.
So I, not to get off of your Trans-Siberian Orchestra kick here, but. I think the San Antonio Symphony is so good. Like they're just incredible. I'm so amazed both times at what they're pulling off without any hiccups. Like and you have to remember, last time we went, there was a bird flying through the symphony and they didn't mess up once. Like not one errant tuba noise from being scared. They're pros.
Are you normally scared of birds?
What if that bird flew in the tuba and then like it stuck its head out to look around and the tuba like the tuba player didn't notice and then he went and then blew the bird out?
Well see, like I don't mean scary in terms of like, oh my god, a bird is scary. I mean like you're concentrating on music, paying attention, and a bird flies by your head. I mean, you might jump. Or you might blow too hard.
Well, I don't. Maybe they didn't even see it. There was a. It was a big place, you know. So again, another good show from the San Antonio Symphony. The next one is the next one, the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Do you know? In February,
it is the next movie. One is indeed Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. What did you think of the movie E.T.? Is it something you've seen a lot?
No, it isn't actually. This was I know I've seen it as a child, but I did not recall it one bit. I liked it. I thought that it was oddly slow paced.
Yeah, that's just changing of the times.
Yeah, I had trouble following along in the beginning because the pace was a little slow.
There is a lot of it that's kind of left unsaid that
I think it's kind of convoluted at times, like the connection between E.T. and Elliot.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, like the fact that they're kind of intertwined and their health is related to one another.
It's not really explained much.
Yeah.
It's magic.
And I kind of forgot, I guess, you know, well, special effects, it happens all the time, that age not well, like just how rubbery E.T. looks at times.
Yeah. I mean, like go ahead.
As well, I mean, especially in the scene where they're, you know, they're trying to revive him, you know, after he's dying. And you know, it's like, oh, why are you doing chest compressions on that puppet?
Yeah, I noticed that too. You know, I definitely think that that it's, I guess, maybe mid-ground Spielberg. I wouldn't put it – I don't even know that I put it in my top 10 favorite movies of his. But it's not bad. I liked it.
I mean, this is what made him a star. I mean, this is what cemented Spielberg as, you know, the storyteller of his generation.
Love Spielberg, and maybe it's just because I love his other movies so much. But I mean, yeah, I don't think it's on the same level as something like Jaws or Close Encounters or.
I think we may have talked about this before, but as far as classic 80s movies, you know, or movies that I had growing up as a kid, E.T. is one that definitely slipped through the cracks because of some weird home video thing, like where it wasn't available on home video until like the late 80s. So it kind of missed out on that mega growth spurt. You know, when people like me were, you know, just watching bootleg copies of Back to the Future, you know, over and over and over and over again because we had VCRs and we had home, you know, ability to watch movies at home. And I think Spielberg, and this may not be how it goes exactly, but he wanted it to be kind of a generational movie. Like it would come back to theaters every generation and new people would pick up on it. And it didn't happen that way because this was the home video era and everybody wanted it to, you know. Can you imagine now if you had like a movie hit theaters and it never hit home release, you know, there was no way to watch it after the theater. I mean, it's just unthinkable now.
You know what's weird, and I don't, you guys probably aren't going to agree, especially I don't think Jared, because I don't know that you like this movie that much, but you know what it reminded me of is you know, when Super 8 came out, how it was basically like, hey, this is pure Spielberg worship. It made me really appreciate what Abrams was able to do by capturing just like a pure Spielbergian vibe. Like, it's that, man, that movie is just pure Spielberg, and it's done well. I mean, it's, I love that movie.
I mean, it's very surface level as far as I'm concerned.
What is E.T.?
No, Super 8.
Oh, Super 8.
I mean, it certainly looks the part. I don't think it's effective. I think.
But I don't think E.T. is either. I think E.T. is surface level too.
No, I think
how can E.T. be surface level Spielberg when that's exactly, I mean, that was Spielberg.
I don't mean surface level Spielberg. I just mean surface level as a movie.
Well, I mean, that's not the same comparison though. I mean, I just think that Super 8 gets caught up in the Spielberg worship and doesn't really tell a good story.
I disagree.
I really hate the design of the creature. I think if you were, you know, it looks like the same fucking, it looks like the fucking Cloverfield monster. It looks like the Star Trek 09.
Well, it's the same guy who designed it.
Yeah, and that's a problem, is what I'm saying. I mean, I don't hate that movie. I think it's, it that movie reminds me a lot of Where the Wild Things Are.
Another great movie.
Where it's not a bad movie, but it's kind of a 35-year-old man's version of what a kid might like. If that makes sense.
Now, I think that that sentence might be accurate for Where the Wild Things Are, but I don't think it's accurate for Super 8. I think that kids really like Super 8, or teenagers, or whatever it may be.
Really?
I took my stepsister to see it, and she loved it.
But how old is she?
I don't think Super 8. I don't think Super 8 is going to hold. I don't think Super 8 is going to hold. I mean, I liked the movie a lot when I first saw it, but I don't think it'll hold. It's, you know, hold over in the next 10 years. People aren't really going to remember it.
I don't think it has any kind of status as it is right now.
I mean, I never said that. I just think that it did. I mean, all I'm saying is that it did a really good job of capturing the vibe of Spielberg, and especially since Spielberg hasn't made a movie like that connected to a younger audience in a long time, where he's captured, you know, what it's like to be a teenager or a kid or whatever.
I just think it's a lot of window dressing. I mean, it's like you bought the Spielberg filter for your Instagram account or something. That makes sense. It's like that's kind of muddied the metaphor there, but.
Well, I just wanted to make sure before I made this point, but I think I would put E.T. definitely in the top five of Spielberg for me.
Really?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think that you have to put stuff in there that set the tone for a generation. I mean,
I don't think I'd even put, like, I know you'll disagree with me, Jared, but Jurassic Park, I don't think I'd put in there. I think it'd miss out on the top five, but only because it's Jurassic Park to me is just a little hard to watch, like, for the first hour before it really kicks in. You know what I mean? Like, there's too much to explain.
What would be your top five then?
Well, definitely for sure, number one would be Schindler's List. Right. Minority Report would be in there.
Really?
Jaws.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
Don't you really like Catch Me If You Can?
Yeah, but I don't know if that would make it.
I mean, mine would be obviously Schindler's List. And then, I mean, personally, Jurassic Park, but I think realistically Jaws. And then Jurassic Park. And then Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then E.T.
Man, God, for me, it's like I don't even think about it. It's, for me, it's Jaws, Close Encounters, Minority Report, and then probably Schindler's List. And then I really like Saving Private Ryan.
Oh man, how can I leave? Oh damn it, that's such a conundrum. I need a six because Saving Private Ryan has to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. No,
not for me. I was one of the very few people that thought that Shakespeare in Love deserved the win over that year.
Oh, I don't get me wrong. I really like Shakespeare in Love.
But what about? Go ahead.
But I mean, you know, I know that Saving Private Ryan is a better movie. At any rate.
Color Purple. I really like the Color Purple. Yeah, I think those would be my five. Color Purple, Jaws, E.T., Schindler's List, and Catch Me If You Can.
You know what?
Minority Report. Sorry.
Do you guys not like Close Encounters?
You know what? It's it's a little too obtuse for me. Like, I just can't – I can't really sink my teeth into it personally. I mean, I acknowledge that it's a really great movie, but – I think it's harder to watch now because I was way too young to see it, you know, to even understand it. I feel like, in a weird way, like E.T. was the kid version of that movie. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I know that they're not the same film, and I know they're not the same themes, but...
His worst? What about his worst? Crystal Skull, Jared?
I don't hate that movie. That movie gets a lot of undeserved hate. I think Temple of Doom is worse than Crystal Skull. I think
The Lost World.
But Lost World's probably my least favorite Spielberg movie, just because it's such a mess.
I guess other people would say The Terminal too, right?
Yeah, mine would be The Terminal.
I don't hate The Terminal. I don't. This later stuff, I can't really. I'm not expecting a masterpiece from Spielberg anymore, frankly.
You don't think so? No, I think that he's still.
I think he's got another one in him.
I like, and you know what? I like Minority Report okay, but I don't think it's anywhere near a top five.
See, I think that is easily top five, maybe even top three Spielberg. That is an amazing movie.
I think it was way beyond its time, before its time. It didn't get any love because it was just, I don't know, people that weren't ready for something like that.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I'm just saying it's not a. I think there's
yes, you are. Stuff. Shut up.
I think Last Crusade is better than Minority Report, personally. I think Last Crusade is when they were firing on all cylinders. But yeah, we are getting way off topic here. But yeah, you can go see Raiders of the Lost Ark, more Spielberg stuff.
And it's Spielberg month at Alamo Drafthouse.
It's September.
September at our awesome friends. I think they're showing E.T. later this week.
Actually, oh, yeah?
They're having a free screening of Close Encounters on Tuesday that I'm going to.
That's enough of this. Let's go ahead and move on to news.
It's time for the Real Rundown, recapping this week in movie news.
All right, Cody, I know you are as hard as a rock over this news. There may be, out of nowhere, really, there's talk of there being some crazy Nicktoons style or Space Jam style movie with the 90s Nicktoons.
Yes. That's,
is that a good way to describe this?
I don't even know what Nicktoons are.
Nicktoons were, let's see, Rugrats.
Rugrats.
Ren and Stimpy are probably the big two that everybody knows.
Also, Rocko's Modern Life, people probably know.
That's a little more obscure, but yeah. And then does this count like the Wild Thornberries and all that?
Yeah,
crap?
Wild Thornberries, Hey Arnold, Angry Beavers, Doug. Real Monsters, Cat Dog, stuff like that.
And these are popular cartoons?
Dude.
They were 90s. They were for the kids of the 90s.
Yeah, they sound terrible.
I love Ren and Stimpy.
I love Doug.
Doug went to Disney, though.
Well, I like Nickelodeon years, Doug. None of that Disney stuff.
Fuck that Disney shit.
Yeah, when Patty Mayonnaise had the short haircut, no way. Sorry.
Whore.
I love Rocko's Modern Life too.
I remember liking that, but I don't remember really anything about it.
Hey Arnold was good too.
You
might have been too old for that.
It's debatable. But yeah, I remember Rugrats. I remember Rugrats being all right. I wasn't a fan of it, but I remember my little brother watching it and it being okay.
Yeah, I was really into that too when I was younger.
When did they grow up? When was that? When did that happen?
It was when I was like 13 or 14, probably. But
the fuck was up with that shit?
I don't know, but Kiko, I guess you have to remember. Keep this in mind. When I was from the ages of maybe, you know, like what, 5 or 6, up until the age of maybe like 11, 10, 11, whenever you stop watching cartoons, 12. Nickelodeon was on 24/7. That's the only thing I ever watched.
And we didn't have that at all. So I understand where you're coming from. I mean, we had to wake up on Saturday mornings for our cartoons. So
Kiko, do you remember? Did you have cable like as a young child, like in the
mid-80s? Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm,
do you remember when like Nickelodeon used to have to share a channel with BET?
I don't remember that.
Do you remember that? I remember that we had a cable box, and I don't know if Nickelodeon would stop programming at like 6 p.m. I think they did. Because that was when Nick at Night, before Nick at Night came around. But they would stop programming at 6 p.m. and the cable company we had at the time, the channel would flip to BET. And I remember watching that, and there was some game show. I don't remember what it was called. I'd have to look it up. But it was hosted by Nipsey Russell. You know who Nipsey Russell is?
I don't.
Old-time entertainer. Played I believe he played the Cowardly Lion in The Wiz.
Okay.
And he would like rhyme and stuff. It was crazy. I really liked it, but it was such a weird channel combination to be like Nickelodeon during the day, BET at night.
Was it Match Game Password?
No, I mean it was like It was a kids panel show thing. It wasn't Match Game.
So one other thing, just anyway. for a reference of time, you know, this was also when they had on Nickelodeon like. Like the live action stuff, which I also watched a lot of, like the game show or the stuff like
Guts,
like Guts and Legends of the Hidden Temple and Double Dare, what would you do? And then they also had, you know, like the live action stuff, like Salute Your Shorts and Are You Afraid of the Dark and all that stuff.
By the way, to get off on another tangent here, I don't know if you read the AV Club regularly, but they've done a few kind of oral histories of like people that were on, like there was a girl that was on Guts. Like she told the story of having been on Guts, and I think she's now a professional stunt person.
Oh, wow.
And then also related to that, Mike O'Malley hosted Guts, right? Am I correct?
You are correct.
Also related to that, there was a story of they talked to two people that actually won the Nickelodeon Toys R Us giveaways. like, and they talked to the, they told the whole story, and like Mike O'Malley was all over that shit too, and that he was like super cool with the kids and told, you know, gave them tips and basically basically every dream. I mean, because that was a thing when I was a kid too, the Toys R Us toy runs, whatever they called them. But you know, basically talking about how every kid's dream was, you know, in real life. So yeah, I definitely understand it.
Well, and you also have to keep in mind that there is a lot of millennial nostalgia in Nickelodeon, you know, to the point where I remember a couple of years ago, they launched a TV network. I think it was at first it was on like Noggin or whatever, that channel that they had, where they started launching a block of programming that was that was old Nicktoons, old 90s era Nickelodeon, and the ratings just shot way up
It's Teen Nick is what the channel is.
Yeah, okay.
That's where they were showing – that was they were showing like Degrassi there and
– yeah, and then they started showing blocks of programming of old Nicktoons and just everyone it was called The 90s or All That.
I know that. I was going to say that because I knew the answer to that.
Yeah,
I wanted to see some Double Dare, but Double Dare was more late 80s than anything
else. Man, I wanted to be on that show so bad when I was little. It's not
Double
even
Dare
funny.
Was great.
Yeah.
And then the other Mark Summers one was called, wasn't it, What Would You Do?
Yeah, that was after my time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what's the news that we're not talking about?
So basically, Paramount is in early developments to make a crossover live action and animation movie of a Nicktoons that would feature cartoons like Rugrats, Angry Beavers, Hey Arnold, Rocko's Modern Life, and Ren and Stimpy, and possibly some other ones. And so they're right now they're trying to get a bunch of different writers to do some scripts. And Mary Perrin is producing it, and she produced that new SpongeBob movie that was really good. And so, you know, I guess the thought is that they already own the rights to all of these things, and so they're just going to cross them all over.
Can't let that IP sit unused these days, man.
Because
someone's going to buy a fucking Rocko's Modern Life t-shirt, whether you're making the goddamn movie or not.
Yeah.
Might as well get that Rocko's Modern Life.
Modern Life?
Yeah.
I really think that this thing has huge potential for nostalgia-based, like the millennial market will eat this up, I think. Especially when it was, you know, it was all that we watched. I mean, really.
Do you think, though, that this can be replicated? Because this feels to me like, hey, you know what millennials love? Fucking Space Jam. I mean, and that's not a good movie. I've seen it several times, and it is a dumb as shit movie.
Listen,
and I don't think...
We'll agree to disagree.
I mean, come on.
It's not a good movie, but it's fun.
That's not what I said. It's not that it's not fun, but you have that nostalgia for it that taints your opinion of it. Am I right?
Yeah, but
I mean, literally, the only funny parts are the two Bill Murray scenes, like where he gets sucked, you know, where he tells Wayne Knight to stop pointing that camera at him.
Yeah,
and then when he makes a joke about knowing Ivan Reitman at the end, that no fucking kid is ever going to get.
Yeah, one of the things that they say in this report that came out was that. The creators have no intentions to bastardize or update the characters, only to create an adventure reuniting audiences. So, you know, I think that they're not going to – I mean, if they stay classic to the core and they use the same writers – I mean, one thing to keep in mind also – or another thing to keep in mind, I should say, is, you know, a lot of these people who created these TV shows are still working in cartoons today. So, like, the whole SpongeBob team basically, you know, got their big start on Rocko's Modern Life.
Right, yeah. I mean, these guys are the staff for those people don't really age out of it.
Right, you know? And so the creative teams are still there and still in animation. Actually, yeah, yeah, it was. It was. It was Rocco.
I think Tom Kenny voiced Rocco, didn't he?
No, that was Carlos Alazarki.
Okay, that's right.
But Steven
Carlos Alazarki.
Yeah, but Steven Hillenburg directed and was the creative director of Rocco's Modern Life, and Hillenburg is the guy who created SpongeBob SquarePants. So.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it kind of like concocting a formula, because I don't even understand why these characters would be what does the live action part have anything to do with it?
I don't know. Maybe it's a pissy millennial like, ugh, cartoons aren't any good anymore.
Oh, dude, come on, this is gonna be this. It's just like Space Jam aping, and did somebody drop a jar? What is that?
Sorry.
You eating like pickled beets? What is that?
I threw my phone on my bed and it hit a plate that was there.
You mad about the Cowboys?
Ah, whatever.
Anyway,
what's the score? Give us an update.
It's 13-6 Giants.
Oh, that's not bad. We'll see how that plays in 3 days when people finally listen to this show. This just feels like a focus group come to life. You know, this is like that episode of The Simpsons where they invent Poochie for the Itchy and Scratchy show.
So you don't think that there's a market for it?
I do, but I don't. But like all poured together in some live action cartoon hybrid. I mean, that can't be anything other than aping Space Jam, right? For real. I mean, there can't be like some. And I'm not saying everything has to come with some creative reasoning, but there can't be a reason for that, right? Other than like, hey, millennials like this bullshit. So well, why not throw this in together?
So it sounds like you're getting hung up on the live action side of things. So if it was just a straight animation, would it make more sense?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of these characters aren't going to be familiar to most people. I mean, Rugrats and Ren and Stimpy are probably one and two in you know, awareness to an audience.
Well, again, I think that depends on who you're asking. I think if you're asking people who are in their 20s and 30s, everyone's going to know what they are and who they are.
Yeah, but I mean, that spans a lot of time, though. From Ren and Stimpy to Cat Dog to Wild Thornberries, that's like 8 years. That's a lifetime in cartoons.
Yes, but they were always running reruns and stuff. I mean, so like they would show old episodes of Ren and Stimpy while they were showing episodes of Wild Thornberries.
I mean, there's a reason, and I don't know what it is, but there's a reason that they don't just, like these new Ninja Turtles movies, they're not just throwing up the old versions of the characters anymore.
Right, right. Think about what you liked when you were little. If they did the same thing here that they did with those characters, would you go see that movie? Probably not. I mean,
if there was like a Transformers movie that combined Transformers and G.I. Joe and He-Man and Thundercats, right. I mean, I can't imagine that being good, but I'd go see it.
Well, I mean,
just because it sounds like a fucking nightmare.
One final thought is that, you know, I think a large part has to do, because I mean, this is right when I was growing up. I mean, this is my sweet spot. And, you know, we talk about nostalgia all the time. Jared, you and I talk about nostalgia a lot. And this is the thing that resonates the most with me when I think about my childhood. So, you know, the way it used to run on Nickelodeon was everything would run in blocks. So, and I'm sure that hasn't changed throughout TV. But really, all of these shows that I mentioned would air back to back to back to back. And it would just keep going. And so I think that there's something there as far as, like, maybe all of them started to blend together in your memories because you watch so much of it in a row that they all start to blend together. And I wonder if people will respond to that because they're like, oh yeah, I remember that and some of that and some of that. And I don't know. I just think that I think that there's a huge market for it for people who are in their 20s and 30s.
I mean, and I'm in my 30s, so, and I remember some of these cartoons. This just feels too calculated. This feels like a BuzzFeed article pitch. You know, just to how can we combine these characters together? Fucking throw them in a live action movie. Yeah, you know, it made a little more sense in a way. I mean, even though it's still a terrible movie, and so is Looney Tunes Back in Action, by the way, that was supposed to redeem the characters from Space Jam. But Space Jam, at least there's a notion that was always kind of persistent in Looney Tunes that these were like players in a troupe. If that makes sense, you know, because all of a sudden you'd see Bugs Bunny in a Daffy Duck cartoon, or sometimes Sylvester would pop in and chase Speedy Gonzalez or something. You know what I mean?
Anima, anima.
Yeah. Or you know, and then other times it was Tweety Bird. So that was a little more naturally occurring crossover. I mean, I don't want to get off on some artistic bent here, but there
probably
has to be.
Stop talking then.
Yeah, I know. Fuck. Shut the fuck up. And God damn it, we're making Rocko's Modern Life meet the Thorn. God, stop it. What are you doing? We're making Rocko's Modern Life, and he's gonna be a guest on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Oh, fuck. So, hey, I'm glad you're excited, Cody. But
yeah,
finally, I get one to be excited about.
Remember, I was really excited about Transformers also, and we see how that turned out.
Ah, well, if they get the same creative team behind it, but that was behind the TV shows, and they all work together, and you know, who knows what'll happen?
Something terrible, for sure. Terrible. You know what? I mean, and I go back to even Looney Tunes Back in Action, which if you read anything or have heard anything from Joe Dante, who directed that movie, he wanted to redeem the characters for how they were treated in Space Jam because they felt like that was just total, you know, 100% marketing, which, you know, was obviously. But even somebody who was passionate about it made a really terrible movie. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good. You know, I think it didn't help that, you know, clearly Brendan Fraser and Jenna Elfman couldn't have been the top choices for those roles. Hmm. You know, like, oh, let's make a big budget kids movie starring Jenna Elfman. What the fuck? Why? Anyway.
Because she's still hot.
And it had the Tim Burton Batmobile in it, and they crashed it into the Warner Brothers water tower. It's just some weird shit happened in that movie. And Steve Martin was in a terrible wig playing like one of the Warner Brothers or something. I don't even fuck that movie. Anyway.
I've seen Space Jam once when it came out. I remember going to the movies and I remember not liking it at all.
It's awful. It's a terrible movie. But I love that. I kind of love the nostalgia around it. Like, I might buy a Bill Murray Space Jam jersey that I've been eyeballing on eBay.
Bill Murray is is so self-aware and awesome in that movie.
Well, he is literally the only good thing about that movie. I can't tell you anything that's legitimately good in that movie except for his role. I mean, when they watch Jordan get sucked into the hole and they just deadpan it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's brilliant. It's great. And Wayne Knight picks up the camera. He's like, don't point that at me.
Wayne Knight in it.
Yeah, Wayne Knight's fine. But Jordan gets sucked into the hole in his first line. Bill Murray's first line is, what kind of camera is that? And then he, like, what are you doing at the end of the game at the end? What are you doing here? Or how'd you get here? Like, oh, producer's a friend of mine. A Teamster dropped me off.
Yeah. There's also a line where they talk about white people not being good at basketball. And and Michael Jordan goes, Larry, talking about Larry Bird, Larry's white. And Bill Murray goes, Larry's not white, Larry's clear.
Oh, yeah, that's a good line, too. I feel like they just let Bill Murray do his thing, and then he left. And
what kind of camera is that?
What kind of camera is that?
Oh, that's funny.
All right, enough of this. Let's go ahead and move on to reviews.
Here are this week's reviews.
All right, this week we have The Visit.
Maybe we should go outside and film some evening shots of the house.
Okay, sounds good, sister.
Could you clean the oven for me, Becca? Get all the way inside.
Becca?
She's done it before.
We really should film something outside.
Do this first.
I'll be quick. Oh, this'll just take a second.
A single mother finds that things in her family's life go very wrong after her two young children visit their grandparents. I don't think that's accurate. That's very, a very weird summary, like from a character that's not really in the movie. Anyway, this is a found footage horror movie from once powerful director, writer M. Night Shyamalan. Cody, you didn't see this. Kiko and I did, and we have wildly different opinions.
We do.
So,
fight.
Kiko, let's take off our shirts and oil up. You ready to wrestle?
It's ready to bitch slap somebody. Well, like you said, I mean, M. Night is, known mostly for his Oscar nomination for The Sixth Sense, one of the best thriller horror films in recent memory. 1999 was a long time ago, though, and he kind of dropped a few bombs along the way since then. A lot of people still like Unbreakable. I didn't care for that movie at all, but I can understand why. This the best thing that I think he's done since Sixth Sense is the first two-thirds of Signs. I thought that was amazing, actually. But since then, I don't know. I just didn't really get anything that he was doing when it came to anything else, The Village. He's known for his twists, of course.
Right.
And they started just getting really, really lame all of a sudden. Or just, not something. I mean, maybe people are just trying to, compare it to what the amazing stuff he did with The Sixth Sense was. But he basically hasn't reached that pinnacle ever again. And I just didn't see him getting close to that again with The Visit, even though it actually is the best reviewed movie that he's done since Sixth Sense. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I'll have to check that.
I don't think so, but I'll look it up while you're talking.
So yeah, I don't know. It's one of those movies that's self-aware of itself. It kind of plays along with the being a little ridiculous at times, and I think that's what it's going for. But I just didn't find it really entertaining from the get-go. When it kind of gets into like the, basically you're trying to decipher what's happening with this grandmother and grandfather and why they're acting so weird while these kids are over there. So that takes most of the time of the film, takes up most of the time to trying to figure out, are they monsters, are they aliens, are they werewolves? There's a lot of different things that are happening in the film. So the things that are happening aren't really, I didn't find interesting at all. I didn't think they were funny. That one kid kind of almost makes it watchable for me, and his name is Oxbow or something like that.
Ed Oxenbold. Alexander the Terrible, Horrible, No Good.
Ah, that's day. Okay. Right. He's funny enough to a point, but even he gets a little bit old for me. But yeah, there's a couple of scenes. I mean, he steals the movie basically. I think with his antics. But as it's going on, as it keeps on going, and the tension is supposed to be building, I didn't really feel anything. Things just kind of happen just because they need to get to the next scene. That scene where the grandmother has a knife. I don't want to ruin anything, but that kind of just dropped off, and all of a sudden it was the next morning. I didn't really get that at all. Just little things like that. And I don't know, the grandmother and the grandfather just didn't have any kind of personality for me to really feel like anything was happening other than them just acting weird. Like, it's just old people being old people, It was almost like offensive at points, where it's just like, "Oh, these are just old people. That's why they're acting weird," Well, and so I don't know. I didn't find that too flattering as well. So I don't know. I go ahead.
Sorry, to go back to your point about how his movies have compared. The Visit currently sits at 62% on Rotten Tomatoes. His last movie that was positively rated on Rotten Tomatoes was Signs at 74%. Unbreakable was 68. The Sixth Sense was only 85, kind of surprisingly. But I mean, his last, everything after that, I don't know if you remember, in 2004, before The Village, there was a weird documentary called The Buried Secrets of M. Night Shyamalan.
I don't remember that.
That was supposed to be talking, I think it all turned out to be some weird publicity stunt. Mm-hmm. Like, it was supposed to be about him and things, but it was, he was in on it the whole time. The Village is where people really stopped buying into it.
Right, that, right. The village, yeah, exactly. The twist was not good.
Right. Then Lady in the Water, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, I do too. That was just a really dull storyline. A lot of different moving parts in it that really didn't add up. It was almost like a collection of characters that are thrown together in this one situation that don't really have anything to do with one another.
Okay, I'm starting to remember it now. After that one.
Right. I'm just laughing because of the next one. That's why.
The Happening. Oh, Lord, The Happening. The trees are killing people. Yeah. Right? That's basically the gist of it.
Right. And actually, I mean, until The Last Airbender, which I thought was just completely unwatchable, I'm pretty sure I gave that an F. The Happening was, I mean, right up there as one of the worst movies of that year, 2008.
The Last Airbender, I never saw, and I never saw After Earth either. The Last Airbender was an adaptation of, going back to Nickelodeon cartoons, a beloved Nickelodeon cartoon called Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Mm-hmm, right.
And Nico, I don't... You gave The Last Airbender a D+.
Oh, man. Listen, good one.
You big fucking softy.
I wonder what I think I was the one who reviewed After Earth.
After Earth is currently at 11% on
Rotten Tomatoes. I wasn't.
But that's, I mean, those two, I think After Earth is probably the most notorious flop of his, because it also included Will Smith and Jaden Smith. It's just, I think everybody thought it was self-indulgent and weird. And
right, right. I saw After Earth like maybe months after it came out at the theater, and yeah, it wasn't good. It's just, but I mean, Last Airbender was something else. The Happening, though. I mean, The Happening is a really bad movie, but just thinking about Mark Wahlberg in that movie is just so funny to me.
Somebody is, there. I see it pass around. There's somebody made a gif of like where it's a close-up of his face with just his eyes darting back and forth. And it just goes on forever.
So the visit.
I'm totally opposite from you. Well, I don't know, totally opposite. But I really enjoyed this. I went in with below no expectations because it's Shyamalan, because it's found footage, which I think has been just exhausted to the point of not even being. I don't know why this had to be found footage.
It didn't.
However, this thing is fucking weird, but like in a good way, I thought. Like there is.
I got some Sam Raimi in it. I mean, they felt a little Sam Raimi-ish at times.
There is some downright kooky stuff going on in this movie. And for the first time, probably in his whole career, it seems like Shyamalan is totally in on the joke, because people at the screening I were at were laughing their asses off at some stuff, and the characters are reacting appropriately, like they're, I don't want to say they're jaded teens, but they're like, holy shit, this is weird. Not like they're freaked out, but they're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, but what joke are you talking about? The inside joke that he's a bad director? I don't get it. I don't understand what the inside joke is.
The genre being ridiculous in and of itself.
The genre that he's been doing for his entire career?
Well,
I just think it's a cop out.
He hasn't been doing this kind of horror movie like this. I mean, this
is
a
horror thriller,
movie.
Right? Thriller. I don't think he really does horror movies. And you know,
I would consider thriller horror movie because you don't really know what's going on. I mean, it's more of a horror is kind of a muddy term in my opinion, because when you say horror, I think people automatically think some sort of supernatural monster, but this is kind of a slasher-ish film at times too.
Right. I just think it was something that people are saying that he's reinvented himself and things like that. I mean, this is not something that he's done before. This isn't the type of movie he's ever done before. You could say the same thing about The Last Airbender as well. I don't think that's a good thing. I think this is going to be like one of those one-off type movies. He's not going to go back and make another movie like The Visit, like he did. I mean, The Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening. Those are all, they fall underneath the same kind of category for him that he's done. And maybe he's seen himself, maybe he sees himself and sees the criticism that he's getting and thought, well, you know what, maybe I just take a sharp left turn here and just try something else.
Well, look, as far as I'm concerned, he's in the same boat with those other movies as the Wachowskis are, where they're playing with house money they earned on a huge, huge hit.
Right.
I think Shyamalan had a little more success immediately afterward than the Wachowskis did, you know, because people still, I know people that really, really love Signs. I'm not crazy fond of it, but.
Oh, I think Signs was one of the movie that kept the intensity at really, really high. I just hated the twist. That's the only thing I hated.
Yeah.
I just really didn't like the last 5 minutes of that movie.
But anything after that, I think anything up to The Last Airbender, he was playing with house money, you know, money that he had earned off of the hits he turned out before.
That's a lot of house money, man.
But it's the thing with these directors like this, these ones that blew up like the Wachowskis and like Shyamalan, they're just waiting for the next big hit. You know, the studios are like, you know what? We got faith in him. You know, maybe they don't see how ridiculous it is. Maybe they think because, you know, something with a big twist like he was known for. And I don't think this movie has a twist as much as it has a plot revelation.
Right. You're
People
right.
are calling it a twist, and I don't think that's really fair. You just find out what's going on.
True. And a lot of people in the theater, I think, already knew it. Did you?
I didn't know it. I liked it. I loved the reveal. I thought it was really well done. And then I think, you know, it sets up the last act pretty nicely, the climax pretty nicely, because like there's this like crazy intense weird Yahtzee game going on. I thought it was well done. And then, you know, there's scenes of the girl like climbing into the oven that are just ridiculous, but in like a really funny way, I thought. But going back to Shyamalan, studios had faith in him because he was able to pull that off. He pulled off The Sixth Sense, and that's all anyone talked about was the twist. So, you know, I can't really blame him for sticking to that formula for so long. I didn't see Airbender or After Earth, but I assume they didn't have twists in them, right?
I don't remember After Earth. Last Airbender didn't.
I mean, and those two kind of seem more like works for hire than anything else.
Right. As well as The Devil. And Devil, he wrote Devil. He didn't direct it. But I actually think Devil, it was a lot more fun than The Visit.
Yeah. I don't remember Devil. That's the elevator thing, right?
Yeah, the elevator thing.
Yeah, I don't remember it that well. That was like a January horror movie. So those things are kind of meant to be cheap and dirty and move on. But I enjoyed this movie way more than I thought I would. I don't think it's perfect. I think the found footage thing is – it was a foot in the door for a director that had been completely disgraced to get back into the game. And I think he's taken criticism to heart. I think he's humbled. Obviously there's no interviews that state this or anything, but it feels like a filmmaker that wanted to get back to basics. And the only way the studio would let him do it is if he threw it in this found footage format that everything is now.
What's going on over there?
Are you getting assaulted, Cody? What's happening?
Guys, I muted the actual mic, so nobody heard that. Now it sounds like you guys are hearing things.
Oh, whatever.
I'm just doing a little spring cleaning in my room.
Anyway,
just to let you know, Devil was released in September of 2010. Not
was it?
In January.
God damn it. I could have sworn that was a January horror movie.
We need to get like a DJ drop of when someone lists a fact that's not true. Just to shame them.
Like a the Price is Right loser horn?
Yeah, or like, you were wrong.
Anyway. I enjoyed this movie more than I thought I was going to. And by the end, there's a gross out gag in the climax of this movie that had the audience rolling. Oh my God.
You had a more fun audience than I did. Cause I think I saw maybe 10 or 12 people leave in the last half of that movie. So
really, it wasn't a big crowd where I was at, but they switched the theater at the last minute here. So that may have been part of it. But
yeah, that gross out gag didn't do it for me at all. That Yahtzee game, I'm thinking back to it now, that was kind of a messed up scene.
This movie is just so weird at times. Like there's you know, old people talking straight faced about aliens living in the bottom of a pond and stuff. And you don't quite know what's going on. I mean, you said you figured the twist out or the revelation.
No, there was people that I overheard as it happened saying okay. It like, see, I told you, but no, I didn't, but I also didn't.
Nobody,
feel like
nobody actually means that ever.
Yeah. That's horror movie.
It's like, I knew it.
I knew.
Jared knew it with, the Boy Next Door.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was amazing.
Yeah, that was.
Well, that was just some shitty like.
But that operated under the Chekhov's gun principle.
Yeah, that was some heavy-handed, like directorial. Just, you know what? Fuck it. This is what's going to happen. He's going to get crushed by this engine block that's inexplicably hanging in this barn.
There was also the Chekhov's laser pointer in San Andreas that we picked up on.
Oh yeah,
I love that. By the way, whenever it's telegraphed like that, it's hilarious to me.
Every now and then something will pop up in a movie like that, the Chekhov's blank. And when it finally gets used again, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, I totally should have picked up on it.
So, you know, I think Breaking Bad might have the best example of that ever with the plant. What's the name of that plant?
Lily of the Valley.
With the Lily of the Valley and the box cutter. Those were two great Breaking Bad ones.
Yeah. Well, I think TV benefits from hindsight way more than a film does. I mean, from what I'm told that we're spoiling Breaking Bad here.
Ah, who cares? Who hasn't seen that show?
I know. But the whole plot line with, I can't remember their names, but the Walt's old business partners.
Yeah.
Was allegedly, thrown in there because a dying fan asked what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vince Gilligan was like, this will be a brilliant way to get this money back into the story and draw Walt out, you know, how they did it in the show.
That wasn't really that big of a spoiler.
Well, anyway, you know how people
are. You bastards.
I didn't know those two characters that hadn't appeared since season two were going to be in this. They were like, he sees them on Charlie Rose or something, right?
Yeah, in the very last episode of the show, right?
Yeah. And there's laser pointers in that scene, too.
Oh yeah, there
the,
is
the curtain call for Badger and Skinny Pete.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
who are the jokers in my card deck that I bought? Deck of cards. fuck it.
Anyway, let's give our grades here.
You go first.
You know, I mean, you know that I didn't like this movie at all.
Well, I want to know how bad you didn't like it, because you said you hated Airbender and you said you gave it an F, but then our crack research team found out it was only a D+. So I don't know what to expect from you now.
I'm giving this a C-.
Oh, you're way more lenient than I thought. I thought you were going to throw the D at this bad boy.
A D, the big D.
So you're going to give D's nuts.
And you, Jared, how much did you love this movie?
A B- for me. This was enjoyable. This was, you know what? I would be happy if we got M. Night Shyamalan back. You know how?
No, I would too. But I want him back 1999, not back old grandma acting weird.
Well, baby steps. It's like Ben Affleck, you know? It's like we'll never see another movie starring Casey Affleck again.
You know, we had what?
To get, talking about Gone Baby Gone. How, like, he didn't have enough faith in himself to put himself in the starring role of that movie.
Oh, right.
Because, like, if that movie had been made, like, today, it would totally be him in that role.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's probably accurate. Yeah. It's accurate.
Accurate. All right. So that's going to do it for this week.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have next week?
Black
Mass.
Next week we have Black Mass. We also have The Maze Runner Scorch Trials.
Oh, you loved that. I know.
We'll talk about it next week.
You ran the maze.
It was amazing.
that's the Indian word for corn.
It is.
For the corn runner.
Yeah. No, I think I'm – Jesus, man.
I don't know.
The maize runner.
I'm pretty tired. So the helotes runner.
Helotes.
Helotes.
Yeah.
What?
And,
so stupid.
Do we have any? I think we probably have something else.
I don't know. Never mind.
Well, we have there's Everest, but we'll probably save it for the next week when it opens wide, because it's opening as a IMAX exclusive for 1 week. So maybe not. And then I think Grandma opens as well.
I thought we saw that this week. Oh, wait, never mind.
Are you not listening to what I just said?
He said your grandma opens this week.
I was talking about The Visit. There was a grandma in it. Never mind.
What about Grandma's Boy? What about that? Is that playing on Comedy Central in the middle of the night
probably
this week?
I read an article about if that deserves cult status yet. Grandma's Boy.
I know. Though that guy, the one that plays the robot guy.
The one that's dressed up like Neo.
Yeah, he was also in Avatar. Last year at South by Southwest, I interviewed Ali Mishalka.
Uh-huh.
And like, she's dating that guy and he was just hanging out there.
Oh, really?
It's kind of weird. I was like, this guy, why is this guy here?
Oh, wasn't he in The Guest? Doesn't he get killed? Isn't that him?
I don't remember.
He's the one that gets the guest gun. And with Ethan Embry's the guy that buys the guns from him.
Oh shit, that was Ethan Embry? Oh, that's right. God damn it. I forgot about that. I love Ethan Embry. Anyway, so that's going to do it for this week.
I love Ethan Embry. Is that going to...
Yeah, I'm going to go think about Ethan Embry for a while. So if you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. You can call us at 920-FILM-STOP. What are you doing? God damn it. I don't know if anybody else can hear it, but that just fucking like sorting going on of all your scrapbooking supplies or some shit.
He's putting his Blu-rays in alphabetical order.
They're already in alphabetical order.
He's getting them ready to go sell because he's embarrassed.
Shut up, nerd.
That's amateur. You need to put them in order of genre.
You need to put them in biographical order. Ooh. Like how much they mean to you to how little they mean to you.
I put you in biographical order.
Price is Right, Looser Horn. Anyway, if you want to reach us, you can call us 920-FILM-210. We're on Twitter at Cinesnob, Facebook at Cinesnob Critic. Please leave us some iTunes or Stitcher reviews.
I haven't been looking to see if we have any new ones.
I looked a couple days ago and I can't remember what I saw.
Well, that's very valuable. So thanks for that information. I really appreciate that.
But yeah, if you got a question, let us know.
Yeah, if you want to just ask us a Q, we'll throw you an A.
We'll give you some D, some of the D in that A.
Jared.
Cody's blushing.
He's scandalized. I picture him in his footy pajamas right now. Guys, you can't say bad words. As he's about to turn on the Rugrats episode where Bill
Pickles, where Pickles rubs off his one on his pickle.
Pickles was the last name.
What was the baby's name? Was it Dill?
The baby?
Yeah,
Tommy.
No, god damn it! The baby boy they had after Tommy.
Oh, it was Dill.
See. Fuck you. You know all this shit.
Well, you said baby. They're all babies. What are you talking about, Jared? Every single character is a baby.
I picture Cody in his Reptar footy pajamas. He's about to listen to that the Rugrats movie soundtrack that had didn't have one of the Fugees on it or something. Do you remember that?
I don't know, man. You know more of this stuff than I do.
Oh, apparently.
He's doing manly stuff right now. He's watching football.
Yeah. 16-13 Giants right now.
Good. Tuesday, when anybody's listening to this.
When this is posted?
Yeah, when you finally get it posted, at one point, at 9:55 p.m. Central Time, the score was 16-13 Giants. Anything else to add to this show we were going to keep short, but is bumping it an hour and a half right now?
I love everyone.
So, are you going to go back to another Comic-Con, Cody?
Yeah, I'll go back. I don't think that I... Well, I don't know. It's sort of exhausting, and it's just such a weird culture shock for me. But it's... I mean, it's cool. I you know, like I was telling you, the thing I like the most is the art.
Yeah.
You know, I could care less about all of the toy vendors, but the art is pretty cool.
You shut your fucking mouth.
Okay, you bought Monopoly.
I know. I did. I've been looking for that Monopoly for a while,
too. And you spent a lot of money on that Monopoly.
Dude, that's like totally average price for those specialty Monopoly boards.
How much?
$40.
Nah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
So eat a dick, Cody. And then come over and play Monopoly. I get to be the DeLorean. You can be Einstein.
You're not going
to
open it. What are you talking about?
I am, too. It's just a game. I'm not going to keep it. Now, there are a bunch of them that are not opened on my shelf just because I haven't opened them yet.
Yeah,
but
whatever.
Hey, shut up.
How many times when's the last time you played Monopoly?
Dude, I don't even know. But I love it. but trust me, I love it. I almost play with
Do you put the money underneath Go when you have to pay the whatever?
No, that's jail fee put that in free parking, not Go.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm free parking. You know that's not in the rules, right?
Dude, fucking don't come at me with your Monopoly shit like I'm some weekend warrior. Doesn't know what he's talking about. We would play, my friends and I would play in college, and I mean, it would just get drunken and like angry, and inevitably somebody would get tired of it and then just be like, you know what, fuck it, and give all their money and stuff to somebody else and inevitably piss everyone else off. So is it like...
Do you play where you have to go around the board once before you actually start playing?
No, that's some bullshit. But we did play with you could make crazy deals like protections or free passes. Like if you made a deal with somebody, you could be like, "All right, I have 3 protections on your property that I can use whenever I want." You know what I mean?
Your Monopoly games sound like they lasted fucking 48 hours, man.
Sorry, it's not a fantasy football draft, Cody. Some other bullshit or some tailgate.
I don't think Cody's in the generation that played board games.
Sure I am.
What?
What was that?
I think I put a D in front of am.
Sure I am.
What was your favorite board game, Cody?
Sorry, I'm a hayseed. I'd have to think about that for a minute. I can vividly remember playing Candyland, and I did play some Monopoly. Played. You remember Guess Who? Played
yes,
a lot of Guess
of
Who. Played a lot of. Played some Battleship. Yeah.
So nothing. None of that. Like
Trivial Pursuit.
Do you have the '90s edition of Trivial Pursuit? You've seen that?
No, that sounds awesome. Oh, also, it's not really a board game, but I played the hell out of some Yahtzee.
See, I can't, like, we talked about Yahtzee in the movie this week. I was seriously tempted to buy the Back to the Future Yahtzee at Comic-Con. But I can't remember that being anything other than an old people's game when I was growing up.
I played it with my grandparents, so maybe that's why.
There you go.
But I also would play it. I would actually play Yahtzee by myself.
That's another thing. I mean, look, I love Monopoly, and I'll gladly spend $40 on a board because that's just how it goes because it comes with little tokens and everything. But I don't understand, like, $40 for Yahtzee because it's just a fucking cup that's fancy.
Well, the Yahtzees aren't $40. They're like $25.
No, the Back to the Future Yahtzee was $35, and I think all those Doctor Who Yahtzees were $35.
I thought that the Jaws one was only $25.
Oh, that Jaws one was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was.
It was a shark's mouth that you put the dice in and shook up.
That's pretty cool. I still wouldn't buy it, but it's pretty cool.
Well, you're getting it for Christmas, man.
Sweet.
Get some shopping. Anyway, all right. On that note, I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
And I'm Kiko Martinez.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.